Meeting of the House Judiciary Committee for Wednesday, February the 21st, 2007. We have no hearing set for today. We're going to do some measure introductions and then to go into work session in the order in which the bills appear on the agenda. We understand that Representative Flores is close to the Capitol, and we're hoping that she'll arrive in time to participate in at least part of the work sessions. Members, you have before you two LCs, 2092 and 2560, and the chair would entertain a motion to introduce those as committee bills with the same understanding that that does, says nothing about where we would be on the merits of the bills.
Mr. Chair, I move LC 2560 and 2092 in as committee bills, be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Barker moves LC 2560 and LC 2092 to be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Lloyd?
Aye.
Representative Kahn?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair McPherson?
Aye.
LCs 2092 and 2560 are introduced as committee bills. Next, I will open a work session on House Bill 2149. Council Stanford, could you remind us what's going on with this bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair McPherson and members of the committee. House Bill 2149 is a product of the Governor's Underage Drinking Task Force, as are all the bills today. Present ORS 471.430, subsection 6, authorizes a court to order alcohol assessment and treatment for persons ages 18 to 20 who violate certain prohibitions relating to alcohol. What House Bill 2149 does is it expands this statute to allow the court to order alcohol assessment and treatment for any underage person, regardless of whether they're 18 to 20 or younger. For first-time underage offenders, the court has the discretion whether to order the assessment and treatment. For repeat underage offenders, the assessment treatment is mandatory. And we've received a statement back from fiscal, and there is no fiscal impact for this bill.
And so how young could this go then? It could be, in theory, any age. Right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the only reason this didn't move before committee was there was a question raised about what, if any, fiscal impact it might have. So I think that was the reason we didn't move it in the prior work session. Do I hear a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair,
we're in discussion. Representative Wisnett.
You know, I guess it's surprising there's no physical impact because we're so short of treatment now.
Right.
I'm just, that's the concern. I'm not, you know, it's great. We want treatment, but we're already short of treatment facilities. Is this going to put a burden, more burden on the limited resources we have? I'm assuming, and I understand the courts do when they order this, they're looking at the availability and they make that judgment, I guess. But their response was no physical impact.
That's correct. Yeah.
Is there anyone here from the Governor's Task Force that could also, are other states going this route as far as, you know, underage, you know, treatment and assessment and success? Or
I don't know, except that I do know that there's a lot of younger people. I mean, some of these people that you see as adults in alcohol treatment programs became engaged in 13, 14 years old, 15 years old. So, this sounds like I was concerned, too, about the fiscal aspect of it. But other than that, I think it's a great idea. Judge can take a look at these cases and decide somebody needs to get into some treatment. They can get them moving early.
Mr. Schradl, why don't you come forward and give us some thoughts about the fiscal aspect of this?
Better explains it. The first paragraph.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. Philip Schradl, Special Counsel to the Attorney General. The statistical information that led the task force in its consideration was that there's much more drinking at younger ages that's occurring now. Every statistical report that comes out shows younger and younger teens drinking. And that was the goal behind this, is that those are the people who, as Representative Barker suggests, move into, you know, that becomes a lifelong pattern. And so the earlier intervention would be very helpful. I can't give you an explanation as to why there isn't any fiscal impact. I would assume that if there is more assessment and treatments that will be ordered, there would be some costs associated with that. But I don't think it would be very substantial. And in fact, I think that the person getting ordered or the family getting ordered into the assessment and treatment may have to cover those costs if they're able to. And the only other comment is that, you know, this is part of the goal of getting intervention before people become really addicted and into the system where it's going to be much more costly later.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schradl, under the existing provisions, to whom are these offenders referred for assessment and treatment? Is it an existing program that perhaps will just get busier but may not require additional staff? I'm just trying to figure out to whom they go for the treatment.
I'm Chair McPherson, Representative Bonamici. I think that's exactly right. There are treatment providers like the DePaul Treatment Center or other organizations that are out there that do these kinds of assessments and treatment programs. And it may be an increase on their caseload, but I would suggest that that's a very good increase if we can get the early intervention and get people assessed early so that they don't burden the system later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, I'm familiar with teen court. I don't know if you know. And now, this is minor in possession. It's not minor in possession while driving or anything. And I think one of the best punishments is by peers. And I know that in our county we've had a lot of success with teen court, not putting it in the formal system or not having to spend court time and judges' times in doing this. Was that discussed during the work group?
I'm Chair McPherson, Representative Wisnett. Actually, teen court is something that we would heartily endorse. The only county that we're aware of that has kind of an ongoing teen court program that's funded is Lincoln County. They've actually made the political assessment that that's such a good program that they have taken some of their county budget towards teen court. It's a very, very effective tool. This wouldn't negate that at all. That authority exists everywhere for all counties to do that if they have the resources that they have available to utilize that tool.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. The only comment I'd make, and it's not a question, and it's a concern, because as a middle school principal, I dealt with unbelievable children that had some pretty serious addiction by sixth grade. And you asked them, well, when did you start drinking? And it was age 9 frequently. And the other side of that is, you know, why did you start drinking? Well, everybody in our home drinks. And so my concern about this bill, which I completely support this bill, is that when you send a child into treatment and it really needs to be family, I don't know how that's going to work, but it's frequently with younger age children, it starts from observed behavior, and you know, whatever intervention we can do is I support.
Mr. Schradl, that triggers a sort of question in my mind, which is that this is in effect taking a statute that applies now to legal adults, that is 18 to 20 year olds, and simply extends it downward to minors. Is there anything about the alcohol assessment and treatment that's appropriate for a legal adult that would be less appropriate for a minor?
Chair McPherson, I'm unaware of any, and I assume and would understand that the assessment and treatment providers would kind of characterize the assessment and treatment programs accordingly and appropriate for age groups.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Schradl or comments about the bill?
I have one comment about the fiscal.
Yeah. Council Stanford.
There have been a couple questions about the fiscal that persons have raised. An educated guess, looking at the issue, is that the treatment in the existing law and then in the proposed amendment refers to treatment as provided in ORS 471.432. My guess as to why there is no fiscal impact statement is when you look at 471.432, it specifically requires the person who is convicted of the violation to pay for everything. That's what it says, pay for the treatment, pay a fine, et cetera. Now, whether that would actually happen all the time in reality is another question, but that is my guess as to why this says no fiscal impact.
Do I hear a motion on the bill if there's no further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2149 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2149 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of that motion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Forrest?
Aye.
Representative Cox?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wignett?
Aye.
Chairman
Kershaw? Aye. House Bill 2149 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Barker, would you be
yes, sir.
Who's going to carry that bill? I will close the work session on House Bill 2149 and open a work session on House Bill 2150. Council Stanford.
Thank you, Chair McPherson and members of the committee. House Bill 2150, again, is a product of the Governor's Underage Drinking Task Force. House Bill 2150 relates to underage decoy operations conducted by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Present ORS 471.346 authorizes OLCC to investigate vendors for selling alcohol to underage persons through what are known as random decoy operations. Presently, OLCC must conduct such operations on a random basis in cities with populations over 20,000 people. The statute requires that to the, quote, greatest extent possible, there must be an equal chance that any vendor will be subject to such an operation. This equal chance provision creates a problem, according to LCC and related law enforcement agencies in large cities, because law enforcement must conduct random minor decoy operations over the entire geographical city, resulting in travel across large metropolitan areas. What House Bill 2150 does is it addresses this alleged problem by allowing OLCC to break up large cities into smaller geographical areas with individual populations of 20,000. Present law is what House Bill 2150 in its original form applied to cities with populations over 500,000. So that would effectively be only Portland. What there is an amendment, the Dash 1 amendment, changes this, if I said 50, I meant 500,000, changes 500,000 to 70,000. So it would allow OLCC greater flexibility in a much wider range of cities, besides just Portland.
We're on those Dash 1s. Dash 1 amendments we don't have distributed here. It's.
I have a copy.
Yeah, it's in there. And maybe. I wonder if we should go quickly have copies made of that Dash 1 amendment. Well, it's pretty easy to read. We can pass it around.
Yeah, people change 500,000 to 70,000.
Want a little time to study that line.
Okay, it is on its way, but I think it's probably it's sufficient understanding just from this presentation here and seeing it confirmed on paper.
Mr. Chair.
Representative,
no, I think that's a good movement, but the problem is we're not addressing the 20,000 because we've gone from 500,000 to 70. So why do we need the 20? Because the way I understand ORS 471.3463 is it's supposed to be random. If you get too small a population, you're going to be looking at, you know, the same vendor, the same sales facility over and over. Why do we need them? If we're going to go down to 70, and I would probably encourage us to go to 100,000, or why do we need the 20,000?
Well, the 20,000 was in the bill originally, so that there's, and that's a function of statute already, that's a sufficiently broad area that the random decoy operations can be conducted in a way that doesn't target a particular vendor. And the only change made by this amendment is to make that less than an entire city kind of operation available not just for our largest city, but available for cities that are large cities but not at that size. So that, for example, Salem, Eugene, and several other cities would be above the 70,000. So they could define some 20,000 population area and do a random decoy operation within that area without having to extend it citywide.
Well, I guess I still don't understand. Okay, so we go to 70. That includes Bend, Oregon now. So before that, Bend, Oregon was not, you could not do a random check in Oregon, in Bend?
No. That, what you could still. But it would have to be, my understanding, Representative Wisnett, is it would have to be all of Bend, like random, taking all of Bend geographically into account. What this bill would allow is you to break up Bend into smaller units of 20,000 and make it random within that smaller circle versus the bigger circle. Is that, it's somewhat confusing, but does that make sense?
Okay, so but what if we didn't have the 70? What if it was 100,000 or what it was? So Bend, how would you do Bend, Oregon?
If we were amending in 100,000 instead of 70,000, then Bend could only do random decoy operations that span the entire city. They couldn't define some segment of the city that was of 20,000 population or more and do the random decoy operation on it.
And incidentally, the 70,000 figure was picked in part based on looking at July 2006 population estimates of Oregon cities and to try to sort of capture the most large cities. So Bend, 75,290 would be included. Medford, 73,960 would be included. There are a lot of cities in Oregon that fall between the 75 and 100,000 range. Gresham, Hillsboro, those are all in that area. So that's the only reason for that.
Okay, again, I don't have the statute. We can look at the statute. But I understood when this was originally passed, it was to prevent, you know, too small a group, and that way you're, like I said, targeting specific vendors. So the 20,000, I guess, is where I have some problems.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
I think along with that confusion, and I share it as well, that it's being expressed by Representative Wisnett, currently, as I'm reading this explanation, OLCC must conduct such operations on a random basis in cities with populations of over 20,000 people. So they already have the opportunity to conduct random decoy operations in cities of over 20,000.
Correct.
So why are we doing this?
My understanding of the problem, Representative Flores, is that this is just from OLCC, is that you have, I was looking for a board to like sort of draw it out on. Mm-hmm. Right now, the way that the statute is written, OLCC takes very seriously the provision that to the greatest extent possible, they have to make things random. So let's look at Portland. Portland is a very large geographical area. And so to the extent that they have to make sure that a place in far north Portland versus a place in as far away as you could get within the Portland metropolitan area have equal chances, their agents are going all over the place in a large geographical area, and it's more difficult than they think it should be. It's more expensive than it should be for moving around, is my guess. And so by allowing, the original amendment said for cities with populations over 500,000 or more, it's okay to take this massive geographical area and break it apart into this 20,000. It has to be random within this circle versus this much bigger circle. So here, 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 it's still random, but within these smaller units. So that was the original motivation as far as I see. And at the initial hearing on this bill, there was there were a couple of questions about why are we saying 500,000? For Portland, why shouldn't they be able to break apart other cities that may continue to get larger if this really is a problem, having to move over, make it random over such a geographical area? Does that help?
I understand everything that you said, and
yeah.
I understand the random sampling process, and perhaps the problem is within determining the random nature. says, Randall, according to the OLCC document that we were provided at the earlier hearing, this simple random sampling may be performed using a variety of general accepted simple random tools, such as random number table, a random number generator, or other method. So it's not like they're drawing names out of a glass bowl and sending them all over to these various areas. It seems there is a methodology in place within a specific location of 20,000 or more already.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cameron.
Maybe I can bring some. If it's 20,000 or more, you have to take in the entire population of the city. That's the issue. And so we'd have a city of 1 million people or 750,000 people, and that what council is saying, that becomes the 20,000 random population. I was the one that raised the issue of the 500,000, and only if it's good enough for Portland, why isn't it good enough for the rest of our cities if we have an underage drinking problem and we want to target some areas to allow the OLCC to narrow that down? If we're going to allow them to narrow it down in Portland, why aren't we going to allow them to narrow it down in Bend or in Salem or in Eugene or someplace else? That was the issue I raised of the 500,000, and obviously the 70,000 comes down to allow some of our larger cities to be able to do that. This is an efficiency issue in government. It's an efficiency of being able to follow up on some of the things that I think we need. We need to protect our kids and our society. So that's the reason why, when you look at the 20,000, it's greater than 20,000. You got to take in whatever that population is today in the statute. So you'd have to take in a city of Portland, 750,000. It might take them, 2 hours to drive from one side to the other side of Portland. It might take us only 15 minutes in Salem, but...
If I'm understanding this right, so Ben, for example, instead of doing a random, computer generates random addresses of bars.
I don't know.
Or whatever. Well, however they do that, it's a random. If it's truly random, it could be they could all be in one spot or they could be all over. Hopefully they'd be all over. So what this bill will allow is Ben to essentially divide into thirds, and you'll work a mission on a third of Ben, 20,000 people, much more efficiently than having to go from one end to the other. Isn't that what we're doing?
Right. That is exactly right. But without this, as it is now, it has to be citywide.
Yeah.
The bill as introduced would have allowed Portland to break it down to at least 20,000 population segments and do random decoy operations within those. And the -1 amendment would bring that down so that our larger cities, those of 70,000 or more, could define an area of at least 20,000 population and do random deco operations that weren't citywide. They don't have to. They could still, the Bend could decide citywide is good enough, but they would have the option to do a quadrant or a segment of the city that would be smaller population. We have the -1 amendments before us. So do we have a motion on the -1s?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2150.
Any discussion of the motion? Representative Cameron has moved the -1 amendments into House Bill 2150. If there's no discussion, clerk will call the roll. The -1 amendments are in House Bill 2150. So now we have the bill as amended before us with the reduction in the threshold for doing random testing of 20,000 population or more segments of a city, brought down to 70,000. Is there any discussion of the main motion?
Mr. Chairman,
or I should say we don't have a motion yet on the main bill as amended. So we have discussion and an opportunity for a motion on the bill as amended.
I want to make a motion.
Need a motion? I'll move House Bill 2150 as amended
to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron has moved House Bill 2150 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm still concerned about the intent. I understand that originally when the decoy system was set up that everyone agreed that we were going to be sure that we didn't have a situation that OLCC had the opportunity to target specific vendors, specific kind of vendors. You wouldn't be a profiling, you know, 7-Elevens or something like that in the sales, and I'm still concerned about that. I'll give you my vote now, but may want to discuss it on the floor.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And please refresh me, Mr. Chair or Council, and the testimony that we had from OLCC. Did we have some indication of the types of facilities that were on a longitudinal look that were targets for the random decoy operations?
Well, my recollection, Representative, is that the nature of random operations
is random.
It has to be random, and so I think that they're not. In fact, what we've done in our statutes already is we've significantly constrained the ability of the OLCC to target particular vendors or classes of vendors who they might believe are more likely to be violating in this area. And this simply allows a little additional opportunity for them to focus themselves, but still within an area of at least 20,000 in population. So I think we didn't get any indication that they were targeting particular vendors, because that would be inconsistent with a random decoy operation. I mean, the randomness is an assurance that it's a range of vendors who are being sampled.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out that the current statute does allow targeted decoy operations, but only if there's a documented compliance problem with a specific licensee or agent, but that the amendment that we're talking about doesn't address the targeted. It only addresses the random. So I just want to make that clear so that people understand.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Then we have a motion before us by Representative Cameron to move House Bill 2150 to the floor. We do pass a recommendation as amended. If there's no discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bonamici. Aye. Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Morris.
Aye.
Representative Kopp.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair Ferguson.
Aye.
House Bill 2150, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Cameron, would you carry that?
Sure.
Thank you. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2150 and open a work session on House Bill 2151. Council Stanford.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. Again, House Bill 2151 is a product of the Governor's Underage Drinking Task Force.
What
the 2151 does is it amends existing ORS 471.315, which in relevant part forbids OLCC licensees from knowingly selling alcohol to underage persons. What this bill does is it establishes a more objective standard that a licensee knew or should have known a person was underage in terms of assessing violations. House Bill 2151 amends ORS 471.315 by removing the knowing requirement relating to underage persons and replacing it with the more objective standard of that the licensee knew or should have known that a particular person was under 21 years old. This objective requirement appears to apply in this bill only to the offense of selling to underage persons and not to the offenses of selling alcohol to an intoxicated person or allowing an intoxicated person to continue drinking.
And committee members, just to remind you that there was a different bill that we heard here recently which would have made the same change. It was House Bill 2166 that would have made the same change for both classes of violation, that is both selling to an underage person and selling to somebody who's intoxicated. But this one is that that other bill was not a product of the Underage Drinking Task Force. I think it was an agency proposal from OLCC. But this bill here is limited just to selling alcohol to underage persons. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, President Barker. I'm going to be a no vote on this. And I actually think this makes it more subjective rather than objective, the should have known. And I'm really concerned about that because if somebody should have known, I mean, if we're going to charge somebody and you can make it easier to, so if I may use the term, to convict them of that, you're talking about people losing their jobs, businesses being severely affected. If somebody's selling alcohol to minors, I'm all for hammering them really hard. But I want a high standard of proof before we do that, just in a sense of fairness to the retail dealers. And you know, somebody might make a mistake, and then it becomes subjective of whether they should have known and so on. So I'm going to be a no vote on this.
Okay. Representative Matamichi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like some clarification on the application, because in reviewing the information that I have in my file from the Department of Justice, it's their position that this applies to both the under 21 and visibly intoxicated. So I would just like some clarification that they're not under the impression that this bill is addressing both of those issues.
Mr. Schradl, why don't you come and enlighten us on this point?
Chair McPherson, Representative Bonamici, you're correct. I misspoke in the testimony that I provided to you. The bill really does only address new or should have known with respect to service to minors, service to under 21. I don't think the language is susceptible of the reading that it would also apply to service to visibly intoxicated. The original proposal that was discussed in the task force would have been broader, and in fact, House Bill 2166 that Chairman McPherson referenced, which is an OLCC-sponsored bill, does expressly apply the new or should have known standard to both, to service to minors and service to visibly intoxicated persons. If I might, while I'm here, follow up on what a concern that Representative Barker was raising. The reason that the task force puts this bill before you for consideration is the difficulty in establishing the knowing standard. And while we say it moves it to a more objective standard, the reason being that the knowing standard means that you need to really be able to establish the subjective mental element of knowing. A should-have-known standard puts it into the more objective, reasonable person standard of that an objective, reasonable person in that position should have known that the person that they were serving to was under 21. That's why we characterize it as a move to a more objective standard. It is a more difficult standard for the licensee.
Representative Krieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have several questions. I wish this was a public hearing because when we finally got this down, it wasn't six cases and they'd lost two on appeal, and we never did get the number of the total cases that they were dealing with?
3 out of 5.
And it's not a significant thing. There's another thing that never came up. How many stores did the state have? How many sting operations are we doing on state stores? And if there was two violations on a state store, would the state shut down a state store? Or is everybody going to be treated the same? Because with false ID, as good as it is today, I would bet you that people are buying in-state stores hard alcohol with false ID. And I bet you it's not being checked. We don't know that. That's just another issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Thank you. I am going to be a no vote on this as well. The knowingly standard, by virtue of numbers of bills, aside from the one that you had mentioned earlier, as we have moved forward in this process, has caught my attention that we are using the knowingly standard in other pieces of legislation that we are moving forward. In the prior bill, the OLCC policy and procedure memo that we used, they talk about the random decoy operation using 18, 19, or 20-year-old minors who look under the age of 26. Now, these individuals indeed go in who are 18, 19, and 20, but look 26 and are either telling people that they're going to be trying to purchase from that
They do not have their identification with them, or they present their real identification, verifying that they are 18, 90, or 19, or 20 years old. However, if they had false identification with them, and they are only 18, 19, or 20 years old, but looked 26, and they had false identification, the person selling to them was relying upon that. I think that moving from a knowingly standard to knew or should have known, we did have some discussion whether it was more of a strict liability issue. I think that moves the presumption even further, and I'm not supportive of that. I think the knowingly standard adequately applies.
Further discussion? I have a question for counsel. When the standard is knowingly, how would one who is finding or asserting a violation, how would that case be made out? That is, how would you go about proving that the employee, I assume that knowledge has to be with the employee who's behind the counter or behind the bar, the OLCC, if we're prosecuting a case of this sort, be established that knowing condition?
Chair McPherson, frankly, I can speak from experience just in my background as a prosecutor, and I'm sure OLCC would be the same way. In all fairness, most of the time that a state has to prove knowingly in these sorts of cases, you kind of are relying on a should have known. When I'm talking in voir dire to potential jurors, and I'm talking about mental state of having to get inside somebody's mind, you can't do it, but you have to look at extrinsic evidence to figure out what they were thinking. And so a classic example that I would use is you see somebody standing in line at a movie theater. I can't read the person's mind, but they're standing in line outside of a movie theater with money in their hand. I look at these extrinsic evidence, and I know what their intent is or what they're planning on doing based on their actions. Based on their actions or other actions. That's not the best way to answer this question, but if I were trying to prove this case against an OLC, against a licensee for selling, I would look at factors like look at the physical appearance of the person, look at were they wearing a sweatshirt that said Madison Junior High School, were they looking, I would use that to extrapolate what they knew. I'm effectively arguing should have known in some ways, but is that answering your question at all? That's the only way that you can.
I think that goes to the point I was getting at, which is that we're probably operating, in my view, on a should have known standard as it is, and that if we make this change, we're really confirming what probably is the process it is. It's you can't get inside somebody's mind to say what they actually did know as opposed to what they should have known. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to address the issue, and maybe counsel can talk about this a little bit and make sure I'm understanding it right, of the false ID, because I think that that's the concern of a lot of people here, that if somebody comes in and that person looks older than 21 and they have some ID, well, it happens to be false, and they're sold the liquor, and then they say, well, I didn't know they were under 21. They gave me a false ID. Well, then I would think that it would come down to the question of would a reasonable person have looked at how good was the false ID? How much did they look like they were over 21? And so in that case, if it's a really good false ID and none of us and nobody who's even an expert might be able to tell without, you know, really examining it, that would be, they should have known. They wouldn't have known that that person was in fact under the legal age. So I don't think that the false ID issue, just because somebody has a false ID, that doesn't mean that they should have known that they were underage. Is that correct?
Yes.
But if it's a really lousy false ID, then they should have known. They can't just say, well, I didn't know they were under 21 because they gave me ID. But if it looks like something that somebody made in a basement in a half an hour, then they should have known. So it isn't determinative, is my
Representative Bonamici, I think that's precisely the point. Like on a no or should have known standard, if a person's presenting a false ID and it's a woman presenting a male false ID, which happens, you know, I could maybe get you on a should have known standard. You should have taken the time to look at it. That it maybe is one difference. New, the person, if the standard is new, the person would potentially have a defense like, I didn't know because I didn't really look at the idea close enough. Should have known. Well, you should have looked at the ID close enough to see.
Representative Krieger.
I want to go back and have counsel tell me, isn't this the same bill that we had the discussion about how many cases there were? We never got the total. We may have had 200 or 300 or 400 that pled guilty, and 6 were contested, and they lost 2 or 3. If this is the same bill, all this action isn't warranted. The job is getting done.
Representative Krieger, I can't answer that question. It is, it's not the same bill, but it effectively is the same bill because that discussion came out of 2166, which is sort of this same bill, but writ larger. And that was the discussion that there were 6, I believe, prosecutions and two. I've got 2 of 6 written down.
We couldn't, Mr. Chair, we couldn't get the number on the total that agreed and, hey, they made a mistake and they fessed up and they paid their fine. I think we're lacking that information, and they're talking about 6. This is pretty insignificant to have the statute, have a bill even up before us.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barker here.
Thank you.
Regarding the male and female ID, the server is required to look at the ID, so if that wouldn't be, I don't think that would fly as an excuse. And while the should have known does come into these things when you have to prove that they knew they did it, you mean you're using all these facts. If we say should have known, I think that makes it much broader to where anybody selling is going to be, well, you should have known. And because the consequences are severe in these things, as they should be if somebody's knowingly selling, I think that broadens it too much and puts too many people, I mean, family people at risk, in jeopardy of not only the business but the person too, the seller. If they make an honest mistake and you say, well, you should have known, they're fired or, you know, and all that. So it's just, I think that just broadens it too much. And as Representative Krieger said, it doesn't seem to be that big of a problem from the Tesla. Thank you.
Once again, and back to Representative Bonamici's example, an individual who, even according to the practice of using decoys if they're underage, but they look older and they present very good identification, a seller who knowingly, based on evidence, sells, already provides us what we need to be able to accomplish here. Moving to a stronger or a stricter standard, I don't think is what is necessary based on the knowingly standard as currently applied in Oregon statute throughout. And I'm very concerned about putting this burden on licensees and sellers that if they make that honest mistake for someone who presents themselves as 26 or 32 and is in fact 18 or 19, and my goodness, you have to admit we have many of those situations now where people, young people, look a lot older than what they present and have very good falsified identification, is not something we want to penalize our small businesses with.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be a no vote, too. I think that we all here want to curb underage drinking, but I don't think this bill is fair in doing that. I think that I would support, and I hope the Attorney General's task force will look at more training, and we have a bill now that puts a burden on the retailers to say we're going to comply and we're going to be trained. I think that's what we need to do. So.
Okay.
I just want to make one more comment. I agree with the urgency of the problem. I agree that it's important for underage drinking. From a legal point of view, though, I would prefer to have an objective standard. And in Representative Flores' example, if the person really looks older and really has really good ID, I don't think a reasonable person should have known that that person was underage. So from a legal standpoint, I would rather have the ability to look at the facts. And I should have known a standard, so I will support the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, one other thing. Excuse me. I think we also did have to hear testimony. We didn't hear an extensive discussion of it, but there is a responsible vendor program and training that that entities are able to be, or I think they're required to undertake. So I think there is that element already in place.
Senator Cameron.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment on the overall policy and procedure. I think we're looking at underage drinking here, and one of the comments that was made last time when the similar bill, which was even broader, so if we narrowed this bill down, how many cases actually would fill into this form? The underage drinking issue and the vendors that we're talking about here work really hard in this industry, or in this state, work really hard at training their employees. As a past representative that actually represented a company that had served alcohol, I know what we go through and what we're required to go through. And we just passed the bill out of this committee, the last bill we just passed out of the committee, to give enforcement to help OLCC narrow down on problem vendors. And this bill is one of those things that's going to open up all kinds of issues that I don't think we need to go there. What we need to do is allow, give them the tools to focus on the people that are, continue to be problems, and those that are law-abiding citizens with an honest mistake once in a while. We don't want to take away their livelihood, so obviously I'll be a no on this.
Okay, well, we've had a lot of discussion. We don't have a motion before us, I believe.
Does it fail for lack of a motion, Mr. Chair?
Is there a motion on House Bill 2151? I think that there's a time when we have to vote, so the chair is going to move House Bill 2151 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Then hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Flores?
No.
Representative Pop?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
No.
Representative Reed?
No.
Vice Chair Barker?
No.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
No.
Chair
votes aye. Motion fails. Close the work session on House Bill 2151. And that concludes our agenda. Thank you for a thorough discussion, committee. It was an interesting one for me to participate in. We are adjourned.